Welcome to Dealcast, the voice of Merger Market, the world's premier publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham. This week, we are heading to Shanghai to find out about deal-making in the Asia-Pacific region. We'll discuss Fujisoft's takeover, China's M&A landscape, tariffs, and DeepSeek. I'm joined by Yiqing Wang, who is the managing editor for APAC for Merger Market. Hi, Yiqing. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Juliana. Thanks for having me.
So let's have a quick roundup of the M&A picture in Asia. We haven't heard too much from the Asia-Pacific region recently because we've been focused a lot on tariffs. China's obviously one name that's been mentioned a lot there. So could you start with a roundup of the key themes and trends for M&A in the Asia-Pacific region for the end of 2024 and then going into 2025, please?
Sure, definitely. First of all, M&A activity in the APAC region really jumped by 11% last year. It's kind of reaching a total deal volume of $857 billion. And one big driver behind this recovery was actually the financial sponsors' interest and very proactive activities in this region. And these investors helped to push the deal volume up by 22%. In terms of the country focus, we see Australia, Japan, South Korea, and China were the main hotspots for those deals. And the biggest deal was actually in Australia, where Blackstone acquired AirTrunk. It's a major player in the data center business for over $16 billion. But it wasn't just about Australia. In China and Hong Kong, and some major transactions also took place, like the buyout of the logistic company ESR Group. But when we look at the first 2 months of this year, the sense of optimism is still in the air. It feels like the mild recovery we have seen since last year will continue into 2025. And just in Q1, we are already seeing some of the same trends that we have discussed in our previous episodes in 2024. Just to name a few standout transactions, like in Japan, there was an acquisition by Bain Capital acquiring Mitsubishi Tanabe Pharma for over $3.4 billion. And there was a bidding war around Insignia Financial, the Australian asset manager. And also the latest deal joining the Hong Kong take private wave was the take private of SunArt by private equity firm DCP Partner.
Thank you. So we're going to come on to China in a moment. But you mentioned Japan, you mentioned financial sponsors, and you also mentioned Bain, which brings me perfectly on to the next question. In Japan, big news on the private equity front or the sponsor front when it comes to one deal. Could you just tell us a bit more about that deal, Fujisoft and KKR with Bain as well?
Yeah, definitely. We have seen that KKR and Bain Capital's battle over Fujisoft was one of the major talking points in Japan's M&A market in 2024. This deal was actually sparked by activism shareholder, and it's in line with the Japan's theme of that there is a continuous push from the government on corporate governance reforms, which has been one of the key drivers to cook more deals from Japan. And it's interesting to see how the global private equity firms, you know, managed to navigate activist shareholder during a very early stage, a pre-deal phase of this deal. And also, I think it also gives us some highlight on how some of the challenges that we still see in the Japan deal making. Another notable and development around Japan deals was actually the collapsed negotiation around between Nissan Honda merger, which was supposed to be $60 billion to create a Japanese car makers to compete with the Chinese and the U.S. rivals, but the negotiation collapsed for a lot of reasons. And our local reporting team actually dig out why the deal actually failed. So it's quite interesting that in Japan, even with the Japanese government support, because we have seen that we have to figure out that the Japanese government has actually initiated the talks between these two companies to go through a merger, but later the company's corporate cultures played a key role in the negotiations. Really came down to that reason that actually Nissan was not able to fulfill Honda's desire to make the target a subsidiary instead of, you know, merging into a holding company. So I think that's also, you know, two very interesting deals for anyone, any global investors want to, you know, enter Japan for to make an M&A deal and navigate the landscape there.
What I'm curious about, how does it kind of fit in? How does Japan fit into this rather complicated global picture? It's got very strong ties to the US. Could it potentially be an easier country for foreign investment? We know it's not going to be immune from tariffs, but I know that the Japanese Prime Minister, Shinzo Ishiba, has already been to see Trump, and one of his predecessors, Shinzo Abe, had a great relationship with Trump. So perhaps it's kind of like less confrontational approach will set it in good stead for foreign investment in due course.
Yeah, just like you said, I think we've seen the news that in early February, when the two leaders met in Washington there, both of them declared a new golden age for the U.S. and Japan ties. However, I do believe that with Trump's America First policy, the relationships do will lead to kind of increased scrutiny of foreign acquisition of any U.S. companies, especially those one in critical strategic sectors like steel. One transaction we've seen as an example is Nippon Steel's attempt to acquire the U.S. Steel is now in limbo, as the president made it very clear that, just like Joe Biden, he opposes a majority stake sale in the U.S. Steel. But at the same time, he is open to negotiations, you know, for a big investment instead. So this kind of reflects Trump's approach, balancing sometimes conflicting, you know, in terms of between national security concerns and his pro-business stance.
Great. And moving on to China, relations between China and the US don't look great with tariffs already imposed on both sides. Could you talk through how that's affecting the appetite for deal making within China and then inbound and outbound deals?
Right. After Trump's re-election, in terms of cross-border deals, China started to pick up slightly in the second half, actually. But that's probably due to an easier financing situation from global banks. However, the momentum, we do believe, is hard to continue with the likely heightened, you know, regulatory scrutiny in Europe and the U.S. after the tariffs of 10% tariff on Chinese export, and then that followed with China's retaliation of 15% tax on the U.S. coal and LNG products, and this rising tension could really have a meaningful impact on the cross-border M&A deals. In that space, we've also seen that China has used some non-tariff measures, such as the antitrust probes into, you know, Google and Apple, and some export controls on the critical minerals to fight back. So there will be a key challenge among Chinese cross-border M&A there.
And one Chinese company that's really set the cat among the pigeons, sending shockwaves across the world and causing tech stocks in the US to plummet earlier this month, most notably the chipmaker Nvidia, is DeepSeek, with the release of its R1 model, which became the most downloaded AI app. Could you talk through DeepSeek's plans for the year ahead, whether it's got any corporate activity expected, or could it be up for sale?
Interesting question. Yeah, the excitement around DeepSeek has pushed, you know, China's onshore and offshore stock market to a three-year high level of in terms of, you know, capital inflow. and largely has been boosting the confidence in the tech sectors and in the private economy in China. But as we reported in our story, the company has been, you know, actively chased by all, like, if I was in 90% of the China investors, if not all of them, but they have made it clear that they are not in a rush to raise any money, probably because that they have already got some kind of commitment from the government, either from central government or, you know, local government, in terms of financial support. But we did report that they are likely to consider a fundraising the second half of this year, but because of the very mysterious founder of that company, prefers to keep a low profile at this stage. And another catalyst which has been creating a lot of optimism this week has been, you know, China President Xi Jinping's meeting with a group of technology tycoons, including Jack Ma, who has been pretty much disappeared from the public views ever since 2020, which is sending a clear signal that the government's stance on the tech crackdown has been reversed. But I do think it's a bit too early to say China market is fully back. But from the insights of what we're hearing from the market, investors are likely to move away a little bit from a very risk-averse stance towards Chinese asset to be willing to take more chances on those opportunities.
Great. So loads going on there. I'm sure we will be back to talk about this very soon. Yiqing, really good to talk to you. Thanks very much. That was Yiqing Wang, who is the managing editor for the Asia-Pacific region for Merger Markets. Thanks for listening to Dealcast. I'm Juliana Needham. If you'd like to find out more about what we've been talking about in this episode, please have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.